This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a 5-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind Original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
The Score Midday Show.
Make it sexy.
Russ Dorsey. You two. I already love what's happening because Lawrence is like, oh, make sure you ask Russ about going around the world, and then like winks. You
know, not Lawrence, the wink.
You know how Lawrence is with you?
Go so get that, it, baby.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. That is Lawrence to Russ all the time. And then you two start talking and it turns out there might have been a miscommunication of some sort.
No, there's no miscommunication. Russell, I can call you Russell, right?
Yes,
okay.
Marshall.
Mr. Dorsey.
Call me sir, God.
Me? And it's like I'm Marshall, the only single person in Chicago.
Yeah, you are.
Like
you are.
No, you are
according
not.
To these ladies, you are.
According to you,
you're
and
the
Lawrence.
Most eligible bachelor amongst us.
Am I?
Yeah, that's
but
what
then Marshall's
me.
Out here like, I don't go out anymore. And
that's what makes me want to fight him.
Fight.
Marshall does this thing where he like prods, then he goes, what are you, I'm just trying to have a conversation. I'm just trying to sit here and do my job.
That's not true. That Layla, have I ever prodded you in this manner that he's describing?
I can say that there are times where maybe you will challenge on a dribble and then suddenly back off.
I know how to press those buttons, buddy.
I am not
Mr. Gaslight.
No lights, no gas.
All the gas.
I do love to check him with at least a raised eyebrow whenever he's like, I don't go out anymore.
You lied to me.
I didn't lie. I was writing fiction with my mouth.
The Score Midday Show, 10 to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Oh, we're out here. I wouldn't necessarily say we're outside, but we're out of the studio.
We're literally inside.
But metaphorically.
I mean, metaphorically can be a lot of things.
We get to be a part of opening day. Happy opening day to you. And for the Cubs, since the games in Japan were 0-2, let's just do it over again. Happy opening day to the Cubs as well.
Oh, they get a mulligan? Oh, wait. Yes. The standings tell me that's not true.
Yeah, no, those games counted. So we are live from the South Side. We are at Rings and Rings on Halsted. We are happy to be here. I'm not going to lie. I'm going to be thinking about Wings and Rings the whole time, I think, is what's going to occur. So we're here. Come see us. We're doing the show from 10 to 2. Marshall Harris. And then we've got Ray Diaz here with us as well. Adam Studzinski, Brandon Fryer back at the office.
So bad we had to leave them behind.
I know. Studs is holding it down. Connor O'Donnell, Jenna Duddleston are joining us as well.
And if you were wondering, Wings and Rings, what's that? Where's that? 3434 South Halsted Street. They're open 7 days a week. This is one of those 7 days. It's the Southside's premier sports restaurant experience. And if you come here, you worried about getting to the game, You don't have to walk. Free shuttle service.
Free shuttle service. Let's go. Although I might want to walk off a wing and ring or two back to the red line. You know what I mean?
Okay. Is that you got here through the red line, right?
I did.
Okay, I did not.
Me and the CTA.
I went Uber.
We do the things. So we had a very similar show last season where we were here. And at the time, it was ahead of the Sox home opener, but I can't recall if it was to begin the season outright or if it was to begin the home slate. I know that they were two different days. We had the Slugger show on the north side. We had the Wings and Rings show on the south side. But as we fully begin baseball season, the Sox and Cubs are in not only two very different directions, but as we mentioned, Marshall, with Mully and Haw, it's unfortunately more about the loss total and trying to go from there than the win total when you consider this White Sox team and what improvement looks like.
Well, simply put, the Cubs season will be measured in wins and their access to the playoffs. The White Sox season will be measured in losses and how many more or how many less losses they have than last year. Because you don't remember the 41, you remember the 121.
Yeah, you're working your way backwards. Yes. That's essentially what happened.
Like trying to break even.
Yeah, when I'm trying to figure out what I think this White Sox season looks like, I'm asking myself, how many wins does Will Venable account for? How many wins does having at least an understood assignment out of the players that you do have on the team account for? When you don't have names anymore like Yoan Moncada, Tim Anderson, by the way, joining him on the south side of the L.A. market, the Angels in town, that makes it interesting. I wonder how many questions they'll get today, for example.
A lot.
But when you consider who the Sox had to begin the year last year and who they have now, knowing what happened and what that win and loss total was, that's what makes this such a challenge.
Well, my thing is this. We're starting here, and last year I remember starting opening day at Cubs because the Cubs were at home opening day facing the Brewers, and it was great. But here on the south side, it's more of a question of who's doing what again?
Right.
Because we don't know not only what the starting lineup looks like, but we don't know who's playing where necessarily on day one. And we don't know that that's going to be the same on day one as it is, say, at the midway point of the season once they played 81 games. I'd argue if the same starting lineup is out there for the White Sox on opening day as it is on game 82, it's been a bad season for a lot of prospects.
And people who I think at this point shouldn't even really be labeled prospects anymore, even though they're right now in the minor leagues. I'm looking straight in the direction of the injured Colson Montgomery. But if you had told me last season at any point that this would be the discussion surrounding him to begin this year, I would be disappointed.
I don't know that I'd be disappointed necessarily just because he was not good in the minor leagues last year. So I until they told us, oh, our plan is to have him be the opening day shortstop, that thought had never crossed my mind because I didn't think he had done enough in the minor league level as far as production to come through with what needed to be seen to say you deserve a spot in the opening day lineup. Now, I also didn't know how bad the opening day lineup would be for the White Sox. And now you've got aging veterans as opposed to young prospects. And that's not what anybody wants to see. Let's be honest. And so it's very much on the other side of a coin, because when you're talking about the Cubs, you do expect the opening day lineup to look like the lineup, not only at game 82, but let's face it, game 162.
Yep.
If everybody stays healthy, this is what you paid for to put out there. And Jed Hoyer is hoping they can get 90-plus wins and a playoff spot and, quite frankly, save his job.
Yeah, they're not talking about bringing up Matt Shaw. That's happening today. And, you know, even guys like Chase Meidroth, I thought maybe for the White Sox would be on that opening day roster. You know, Anaya's a guy who was DFA'd in January, then is brought back. And that's not the move you want to see even on a team that is rebuilding. You know, you do what you can and you do the right thing for the big league club. There's no doubt about that. But when you look at the picture overall of what that says, it's not ideal. And that's unfortunate. Is this an opportunity for guys like Sean Burke? There's no question. Does Luis Robert use this time to get right to make him the best he can be to either be on this team or to be a trade candidate? Yes. You know, that is something that you can look toward. But when it comes to seeing how this looks like today, I hope we are talking about a different team come August, September.
That's the hope, but the reality is I don't expect the White Sox to win 50 games. And I expect Will Venable to make a difference, but he's not going to make that much of a difference on a team that doesn't have Garrett Crochet and Eric Fetty at the top of their rotation to start the season. You can start with that, but also say it can still be a positive White Sox season, even if they only win 48, 52 games, if the back half of the season you see young prospects now in the starting lineup and progressing and not going 0 for whatever to start their careers.
Yeah, Andrew Benintendi, of course, you know, coming back from his setback during the spring seems to be in a good place. Also, 773, D-Rose at noon. Derrick Rose is throwing out the first pitch, but no, I said D-Row, as in Mark DeRosa. I could see where that would be confusing.
Yeah, those are two very different people.
So, no, not D-Rose, D-Row. So that's the difference there. Mark DeRosa of MLB Network is joining us at noon, like we said. PJ Glasser before that at 11:25 from BetMGM Network to talk about the tournament. Wayne Randazzo to talk Angels, the White Sox opponent. That is at 12:25. AJ Pierzynski at 1 o'clock. And I remember, Marshall, the conversation we had with AJ last year where AJ says, what do you think the White Sox are going to do? And I remember sitting there talking to AJ and I said, well, last season they outright said they wanted to win the division. And that was the season where they lost 100 games. They did not say that to begin last year. So when I said that to AJ, we kind of knew what we were in for, but I don't think anybody realized it was going to amass to the number that it did.
And you don't think that they're going to get to 121 again, but at the same time, looking around, there's a lot of questions. There's more questions about the White Sox, you could argue, than any other team in Major League Baseball. And some of those questions will be answered if they can get their call-ups up within the first month or so. When you talk about Mydroff, also if there's a way for them to get other guys up there, specifically the young arms that we're looking to join the rotation at some point. I think for me, if Andrew Benintendi can play like he did the second half of last year, where he was good objectively as far as at the plate, then they have a chance to score some runs with Benintendi and Luis Robert Jr.
Yeah.
Now, if Luis Robert Jr. goes off and they get rid of him early because somebody really wants him and they can get prospects and not have to wait till the deadline, then maybe that opens up some playing time for other people as well. But overall, I just know the White Sox aren't going to be good, and I've accepted it. It's kind of like I accepted the thing about the Bulls making the playoffs. You accept certain things, and then once you process it, okay, I don't have to worry about it anymore. I know what it's going to be. Now we can move into another direction. And with the Cubs, my focus is mostly on them just because of the expectations hanging over them. And that's going to be more a thing. With the White Sox, it's who's in the lineup. With the Cubs, it's like, well, this guy should bat here in the lineup. The fact that you've advanced to that type of conversation with the Cubs shows you just how far ahead of the White Sox that they are in real time.
And, you know, for me, opening day is always remembering opening days of days past. And that includes situations like where there was a time where I remember in the first month of the season, and I want to say this may have been 2016, and this was one of the years where the Sox did sign a lot of free agents, and there was the discussion of whether or not it was going to be a year like where you could say with any sort of confidence, oh, is this going to be a year where they could both have a chance at the World Series? You know, could you see what would happen there? And we know that that wasn't obviously the case, but the times like that where you're so hopeful, where you know teams are actually going for it or they're trying, compared to what we're seeing right now, at least collectively, it's you know what the plan is. You know that there's going to be a process. We used to joke about trust the prospects at NBC Sports Chicago when it came to the White Sox because they were rebuilding. You know, Chris Sale gets traded, and that was really the beginning of that last rebuild. It just stinks when you think it only netted you one playoff win.
I was there. It was a lovely night, Sunday night on the South Side.
And then one playoff win in the 2020 season, so two total.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, so to do this and to see how this is going to supposedly shake out when you're still so in the dark about so many people that you thought would have been brought up or just more online right now. That's where it gets difficult. Now, I'm not talking about guys like Hagan Smith. I'm not talking about Noah Schultz. We got to see what they can do in spring training. They're going to get their fair shot in the minor leagues to see how they can shake out. But moving forward, you know, it's when you put it in contrast about how far the Sox have to go to be at that point again where we discuss them happily on opening day, that's what makes this, I think, just a little sobering.
No, well, and look, I'm not discussing the Sox unhappily. I just understand that this is part of the process and this is what it's going to be. I mean, would I love to see Colson Montgomery starting at shortstop and see what he has at the major league level? Of course, but I understand there are setbacks, there are injuries, and also sometimes some prospects take longer than others to get ready. Now, Luis Robert Jr., my main thing today looking at him in the lineup is, are they going to pitch to Luis Robert Jr.? Is there a reason to pitch to Luis Robert Jr.? Also, don't let this go over your head. They're playing the Angels. They have a chance to win games. If they have good performances, they're opening with the other LA team. The Cubs open with the Dodgers. We see how that went. But they've got the other end of the spectrum. They've got the Angels and an Angels team that's not really expected to do much of anything. Except for stay off their cell phones.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's right. No cell phones in the clubhouse for the Angels. But the AL West is weird. You know, it's not the same as just locking in the Astros. There's a lot of people projecting the Rangers to win this season.
And don't forget about the Seattle Mariners. They're always right sniffing around. They just paid Cal Raleigh a lot of money.
Yeah, and so you could say that perhaps, you know, there's somebody different for the favorite. That isn't your typical what we think of when we think of the Astros. That's part of the reason why Kyle Tucker is now on the north side. And for the Cubs, they have the chance to face a guy who has really just been terrifying on the mound in Zach Gallen. I remember first seeing him here when he was with the Marlins and they were facing the White Sox, and this guy could just mow people down, and you knew right then and there what you were working with that young pitching talent. This is his third opening day start. So for Gallen, you know, you're trying to see if the Cubs offense can come alive, but I guess you're not upset if it's similar performance to what we saw in game one against the Dodgers.
Zach Gallen's never had to face Matt Shaw. Zach Gallen's never had to face, should I say it, Gage Tater Workman.
Are you a happy guy today?
I'm happy. He's on the official roster. Unless there's some last second change, he's going to be with the big club, which is what I said should be all along. Because why are you taking Rule 5 guys if you have no intention of giving them a chance to actually make the team? And you could say it's an injury contingency, which is needed because Vidal Brujan, as we know, is starting the season on the 10-day injured list. But with the Zach Gallen thing specifically, the Cubs have a chance here to come back and wash away memories of Tokyo by making a statement tonight. Just make a statement. Score some runs. Rough up Zach Gallen. Wait him out. Get him out of there after four or five innings. That's what they can do.
No, that would be ideal. That would be ideal to send Zach Gallen packing after four innings. That would be the best case scenario, I think. But I also just respect what the guy brings to the table. So, like you said, have a reasonable expectation for the Cubs when it comes to an incredibly difficult month to start the season. And with the White Sox, it's see what you can see out of the players you know, and then look for the guys to come up and we're keeping an eye on the minor leagues like we have in seasons before. I'm okay with that because that means you have something to hope for. And hopefully we are talking about a team that is on the upside of this next season.
I'm looking for diamonds in the rough. And let me tell you, with the White Sox, there's plenty of rough to search for the diamonds. So if we can find something that gets us excited in the early going, whatever that is, I'm all about it.
And the Sox had stretches last year that were a lot of fun. You know, they had stretches of the season and in June where they were hitting home runs in multiple games in a row, and we couldn't say the same thing for the Cubs. And there was reason to believe their record didn't just indicate the record on its face. Like, there would be times where they were leading late in games, and unfortunately, one bullpen outlasted another. You know, and that is the case where a lot of your losses rack up in baseball like that. You know, your bullpen just peters out, unfortunately. And I did love that Eric Fetty signing last year. And this is a different part of trying to get right for them this year. You try to get value out of Fetty. I argue they didn't get enough when that trade was made, but now you're just trying to see what you can get. And I think Miguel Vargas is somebody you look toward to have a better year, because that is how you judge what you're seeing out of this new regime and Chris Getz and what they're trying to do on the South Side.
My whole thing with them is this. You could say they had fun stretches, but it's all relative. And when you're hitting home runs and you're still losing games and then you win an occasional game, we celebrated White Sox wins at one point like it was like it was a birthday party. Because it was so rare. It felt like once a year they win.
They beat Chris Sale last year.
Yeah.
Nope, I'm taking it. I am taking it.
I'm not
hanging
my hat on it.
Who won the Cy Young last year? Chris Sale. So, I'm going to take those wins where I get them just because it is fun. That's the reason people are here. We've already got Wally and Pete from the 108 out here, which means the party has officially started at Wings and Rings. That's how I see it.
Whatever you need to tell yourself to get us off and going, I mean, it's early. It's not even 11 o'clock yet.
No, but this is the day. This is the day to spend time, see your baseball friends that you know, spend time with your crew, enjoy a day off from work. Maybe not that I'm telling you what to do. And that's what we get to do. We get to celebrate it with everybody already coming in here at Wings and Rings on Halstead. This hour, by the way, is brought to you by Menards. Save big money at Menards. We have more coming up as the Midday Show joins you from Wings and Rings here on the South Side. We had a lot of discussion surrounding John Greenberg's question and answer article with Jed Hoyer from The Athletic. That happened yesterday afternoon. Part two came out today. So we will take a look and evaluate based on a guy who said that his team has to outperform expectations. Yeah, I said it. You've got the score.
Percentile or above outcome on the season. I think you're going to look back at some of the significant grouping of these young players you just mentioned. Pete, Michael Bush, Matt Shaw, Ben Brown. I think you're going to see some of these young players take a step forward. And you know what? Jed Hoyer is absolutely right. They will have to take a step forward if they want to go to the playoffs. They can't have Matt Shaw come in and be a guy who bats 200 and has an OPS under 700 and plays not up to snuff defense. He doesn't have to be a gold glove third baseman, but he's got to make the routine plays.
The problem, too, is the Cubs are so hungry and so in need of power that you want everybody to hit a home run. You want everybody to hit more than they did. Three hits against Yamamoto in Japan, I get it. You know, I get that that's going to happen, right? Three hits total as a team in that game. They end up with eight in game two. As Craig Counsell famously said, they had six singles and the Dodgers had six home runs. That's a good example of a contrast you're seeing. When we talk about the need for the offense, it's not just getting on base. It's not just walking. We know they can do that. It's the extra base hits. It's needing that extra power. We love what we've seen out of Dansby Swanson, especially for the past few weeks. And Greenberg asked him about that as well. What about Dansby Swanson? He had that surgery after last season. I don't know if that was a surprise to you, but he didn't hit like you could expect him to last season, and that probably had a big effect on your year. Hoyer says he was banged up early for sure. He got better. I think his second half was better than his first half, certainly. But yeah, he was definitely feeling it last year, and you know that affected his offense. To his credit, he still played great defense and was a valuable player for us. But the first half wasn't up to his standards, and we were a little bit surprised at the end of the year when he decided to have surgery. We were a little bit surprised. That's about as much as you're ever going to hear a GM say. He also said, but that also told us a lot about him, the fact that he kind of grinded through it. I think that's something that we knew about Dansby, was that he takes his responsibility seriously. He wants to be out there. But in the case of what we saw last season, was it to a fault? You know, now that even we're seeing more out of him this year with the bat, was it to a fault? Did he think that his defense could at least do something more for the team if he's out there? I could see why a player wants to put that pressure on himself.
Listen, here's what we know about Dansby Swanson. He likes to play 162. How do I know this? He's done it in a major league career at a time when guys aren't really playing 162 anymore. Now, he's a little bit older now. You hit those 30s, your body doesn't react the same to doing everyday athletic activity as most people in real life can tell you, whether you're a professional athlete or not. For him, I think why they were surprised is because they figured if he needed surgery, he would just get the surgery to get back completely healthy. The fact that he was able to gut it out tells us that they didn't know how bad it really was until he asked, hey, I got to get the surgery.
Yeah.
And now he looks like a different ball player this year than he did last year. And I think that's a good thing for everybody involved, because if he can have the type of season they paid him to have with that big contract, I think everything's going to be all right. And he's one example of several veterans. I don't need guys who hit 40 home runs, because I look at the track record. They don't have guys who hit 40 home runs. But if everybody can hit 20, and then the guys that you need to can hit 25 to 30, you're going to be okay. Looking up and down that lineup, everybody should be able to put up 20 home runs, except for maybe Nico Hornet.
At least. And you expect Kyle Tucker to put up 30.
Yeah. And so if that's the case, if guys come up short and they're only hitting 15, 18 home runs and they're not getting to 35-plus doubles, then you have a problem. But it does come down to what you said before, the slug of it all. You can get guys on base. You can walk. We saw that in the Tokyo series. But if you don't have guys who can pop it out or at least hit a three-run double, you're going to be in trouble in a lot of these games you face, not necessarily against the bad teams, but against the upper tier or even – in their case, the Milwaukee Brewers within your own division.
It's just painful to think about how many times I've talked about runners in scoring position.
Well, that's a
painful
thing.
We wanted to let you know as well. This is big. Jed Hoyer will be on with Spiegel and Holmes at 5:15 today. 5:15 with Spiegel and Holmes. They are live from Circa in Las Vegas. So I don't think they got Jed out there. I think Jed's probably in Arizona or Chicago, one of the two. But Jed is on at 5:15, so you won't want to miss that. That's later today. As we continue our coverage of opening day here on the South Side as well.
Does it feel like opening day? It does not feel like opening day to me. Well, and maybe that's because we already dealt with the Cubs over in Tokyo and waking up at 4 o'clock in the morning to watch them.
Yeah, and even yesterday we got texts on the text line saying, oh, it's Cubs opening day tomorrow. It's not, actually. It's domestic opening day. It's one of their four in a series. Sacramento opening day is what I'm curious about when you talk about getting weird. There's another quote that I want to bring up from this as well. Greenberg asked him, this is your fifth year running the Cubs since Theo Epstein left. You had to build up the farm system and trade away most of the remaining guys from 2016. How do you think you and Carter Hawkins and everyone else has done putting the team in a better position? He says everyone has a set of challenges they're facing. I think the challenge for me taking over was that Theo left a year early. There was a lot of questions about, remember what they were going to do with that money that Theo had walked away from? Like, were they going to reinvest that in the team? And it says, and in part because he knew that we needed a reset, and he was sort of giving me a chance to do that. So that was the first two full years, trying to build up the farm system and sort of get the organization back to health. I think that we've done that with really good young players. Our books are super clean going forward. And the organization is very healthy and in a great position that way. I thought that that was very interesting.
Which part was the most interesting? There's a couple of things I picked up from that. The books being super clean going forward, only because we know about the impending work stoppage and trying to figure out, if Kyle Tucker's only here for a year, what's your plan next year? You've already got to be looking ahead. Because it ain't Camp Smith. He doesn't play here anymore.
Oh, man, aren't we watching to see what happens in Houston today? He also mentioned that there's two seasons left in the CBA. And as you get close to the end of the CBA, people do start to think about things a little differently in terms of contracts. And he said, I think that is certainly the case now. I know that that's happening. I think any GM who doesn't acknowledge it is not telling you the whole truth, which I understand.
Or they're really bad at their jobs because you need to be aware.
Well, or maybe they're just not allowed to talk about it as freely. Jed in his last year of his deal, maybe he's a little bit more able to. But when you look at the numbers themselves, when you see the committed years of money based on the data, that indicates to you alone that teams are acting in kind.
Okay, so my curiosity is about not just baseball as a whole, but when you look at the Cubs and the White Sox, don't have to worry about the White Sox. They weren't spending any money anyway. But when you look at the Cubs, if there are just 2 years left before it all shuts down and potentially we lose an entire season, because that's really on the table, the idea that in 2027 there won't be a baseball season, which is crazy, but also very much a real possibility as the owners have to figure out what they want to do. And then after figuring out what they want to do, you can call it super big market versus big market versus small market. We know the Cubs are not the super big market. They're just the big market because they don't spend like a super big market. And then after they figure out amongst themselves what they want to do, then they've got to go to the players and try to get a deal done. And I think the salary cap thing is going to be the main holdup slash injection that's going to be rejected by the bodies of MLB players. So that all takes precedent in the macro over the micro of this season and then next season. Because if Kyle Tucker's not here next year, and I don't think any of us expect him to be here, then I don't know, man. I don't know what the plan is next year. I'm excited and curious to find out, though.
Yeah, you know, you bring up a good point. Here we are, hopeful about the Sox future, and we know kind of what we're expecting to see next season based on certain prospects coming up at certain times. I cannot tell you that for the Cubs. I cannot tell you what they're going to do when it comes to either the possibility of extending Kyle Tucker or how you replace that offense. We know what happened when it came to Cody Bellinger, the other, you know, big source of offense for them. No matter how you look at it, relatively speaking, that was the case. So when you consider those two things right there, just not having Bellinger on the team, he goes to the Yankees, you've got Kyle Tucker for 1 year. I can't tell you what the exact plan is, which is wild when you think about it like that.
Guess we'll have to wait and see and talk about it every single day until something is resolved.
Until something is resolved. We have more baseball coverage here coming up on The Score as we are live from Wings and Rings on the South Side, 3434 South Halsted, open 7 days a week, the South Side's premier sports restaurant experience. It also smells really good in here. I'm just warning you now. Marshall Harris, Layla Rahimi, the Midday Show on The Score continues.
The Score Midday Show, 10 to 2 on 670 The Score.
So we're all competitive. I'm certainly competitive. Will's competitive. All these players are. You know, our fans, you know, we've got tremendous fans here in Chicago, and they want to see a winner. You know, we had so many fans that were in spring training in Arizona that I was able to interact with, and our players as well. And, you know, we feel the support. We also understand the frustrations. Certainly, you know, they want to come to a game and expect us to win each and every night. That's not going to be the case, but, you know, our intent to win each and every night can be shown just with the effort, the attention, the detail, and this roster will certainly shape it in a fashion where we feel very confident for the future.
Chris Getz. He cuts the music. Chris Getz and the White Sox have a release that just came out a minute ago. This is what I want to see on opening day. White Sox make 10 roster moves. You know what they are. You have an idea. Selected the contracts of Mike Clevinger, Travis Jankowski, and Nick Maton. Placed on the 10-day injured list, Brian Ramos, Josh Rojas, and Mike Tauchman. 15-day, Tyler Gilbert. 60-day injured list, Drew Thorpe. I don't want to talk about it. I think we have to talk about it. Designated for assignment, Jake Eater and Dom Fletcher. Jake Eater. Yeah, yeah. What's up, guys? I see Pete Hand. I see Wally here from the 108. And, yeah, I have the same opinion because weren't we told that trade was supposed to be a big deal? I think we were, Jake Berger. I think we were.
So I'm looking at the roster and everything. I don't even put much stock in this email that you just read the results of and trying to put it all together, right? I don't want to read it on paper. I want to see it on the field, and then I'll pass judgment on what's out there.
I'm starting to boil when I consider what happened with the Dodgers, St. Louis Cardinals, and Sox trade, and now the burger deal that I think may have done in Kenny and Rick, and how much we heard about Eater.
Well, I mean, What is it you have to ask yourself, Layla? And this is me as a lifelong White Sox fan, right? Every year, I just ask myself, what do I want to see? That's question number one. And then number two, I ask, what are realistic expectations? And very rarely does what I want to see equate to the realistic expectations. And when I say realistic expectations, that's looking around and seeing what everyone else is saying. And so you don't just think with your heart, you think with your mind. And I think with White Sox fans, a lot of us go crazy because we think with our hearts and then our minds get affected by the disappointment of not getting what we thought we deserved necessarily as fans of a baseball team.
I'm
right?
not going to do this. I'm not going to do the who won the Jake Burger trade right now.
But
I'm
you seem like you are going to do that because I see you scrolling right now trying to remember all the little details and what's happened since. Jake Burger was good for the Marlins.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, and now he's with the Rangers, and he's still considered a valuable piece there. And by the way, Fangraphs has them winning the AL West.
So that answers the question you ask: who won the Jake Burger trade? Jake Burger won the Jake Burger trade. Man. It's a simple answer for that. Stop trying to make it more complicated than what it is. You're taking the White Sox and treating them as this multi-level CIA-level operation.
No, I'm treating them like a baseball team that's supposed to be rebuilding.
You're giving them a little too much credit.
And trying to get something in return for a trade for big league talent that's established?
I'm saying the presumption or assumption, however you want to put it, that they're going to get good stuff back for their players, I've never been hopeful of.
Well, I mean, that's what they did the last time when they traded Chris Sale. That was how they built that team. Like, whether or not you like it, Yoan Moncada, and at the time, who's now on the Dodgers, when you put it all together, like that trade is what Moncada's on the Angels, but that trade is how they got there. Michael Kopech, like that's generations of trades are how you build teams. You keep tradable prospects. You try to figure out what you're going to do with some of these guys. When I see the news come across that Eater is DFA'd, yeah, I'm going to say something because if you can't get anything for that after a return of big league talent to another club, yeah, that's an issue. Those start to add up, and that's how they all add time.
They add time to
how you put a team together.
I'm not disagreeing with anything that you're saying. I'm just saying my expectations of the White Sox getting those types of things done in the mold of what you're thinking as a big league club, you need to point to me and show me big league club activity for the White Sox and how that's looked for the last 5 years or so.
Well, for example, Edgar Caro is somebody that at some point we expect to see. And he was part of the trade that involved Ronaldo Lopez and Lucas Giolito to the Angels.
Okay, I hear what you're saying, but when you say expect to see, that means he's not here yet. I at no point expect anyone to actually get here when we're talking about prospects from these deals.
Well, Yeah, we know that's the case, at least right now, for quite a few.
Yeah.
And they have the opportunity. You know, there's not as big of an incentive now to keep people down as we discussed. That's part of the reason I think we see Matt Shaw on an opening day roster. That's why we see him in an opening day lineup. Now, John Greenberg, because this is the John Greenberg hour here on the Midday Show on The Score, also did a Q&A with Chris Getz. That came out a couple of days ago. And I thought it was worth bringing up today because we knew we were going to be here on the South Side, and this is a more focused show in that direction. So he talks about what have you learned? And Getz says, in regards to this spring training versus last, we've got a better understanding of who we are and where we're headed than we did a year ago. I think that there's certainly an advantage in that. That itself is going to lead to better outcomes. I'm not sure how, but if these people opening up positions for other people or at least opportunities to see who else you can try to get on this team, then I'm interested.
Okay. Going back, let me ask you a question. Let's take that into context too. Today, what do you expect to see from the White Sox?
I'm still trying to figure out who's going to be playing where.
Okay, so one problem at a time. You're kind of going with this macro view, and I'm just trying to get through the day with the White Sox. Does that make sense? I'm just giving my honest, like, how I feel about it. If we get to the All-Star break, and it's the same guys running around out here, guys who won't be here when the White Sox are good again, then it's not pointless because baseball is baseball, but I want to see the next wave come up.
But, for example, the goal of trading and, first of all, signing, taking a risk on, spending a roster spot on a guy like Eric Fetty, and then developing him because we knew that he had a good relationship with Brian Bannister. And Bannister was confident in him. And then you send him away at the trade deadline, which made all the sense in the world. You've got to get a significant return for that established big league talent. Fetty's still on the Cardinals roster. You're going to see Fetty. So he's still contributing to their team. They've got to get back more in return. Now, that trade is not on Chris Getz. That was the Jake Berger trade that took everybody down in the regime before. We don't have confidence that it took everybody down.
Well,
but we do know that there was miscommunication and things that were involved there, and the disconnect between Kenny Williams and Rick Hahn, reportedly from our friend Ryan McGuffey, did have a factor. But when you consider looking at it even in the lens of today, that tells you a lot about how far they have to go.
I think when they signed Eric Fetty, they knew exactly what they were doing. They weren't going to be good last year, but they said, here's a guy we can give some money, very affordable, and we can flip him at the deadline.
It's a win-win. It was a win for the Sox because he got to flourish with them, and that meant a better chance of a win for them. And then you saw, in return, somebody who was going to bring value to another team. But the idea is you were going to get something of value back.
And the... We're still waiting to see if that is actually the case.
It now focuses on Miguel Vargas, who I think if you're looking at people where you want to see what direction the Sox are really headed in, when Chris Getz says that, they have a better understanding. I think they took out the variable of the manager losing them some games, which Pedro Grifol did. I don't think there's any disagreement there. But it's trying to figure out how that looks for this team going ahead with this season.
What I have to say to that is very simple. It's four words. Good luck, Will Venable.
Or trust the process. No?
That's three words. It's prospects, not process, because, you know, that process thing is a whole different context for me personally.
I don't know that I'm trusting anybody yet. So Adam Studzinski tipped us off to this. Eric Bieniemy joined the Chicago Bears podcast.
The official
Chicago Bears podcast. You know how I feel about their YouTube channel. And we are all curious to see about Eric Bieniemy's career arc and how it's gone the last couple of years. So we get some insight from the man himself. That's next here on The Score, live from Wings and Rings on the South Side.